I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to yet another monthly Patreon wrap-up. What is this, I hear some of you asking? Well, over on Patreon, every single month, we release bundles and bundles of bonus content. What is Patreon? Well, it is a subscription model service that you can head on over to right now, patreon.com/redhanded. Where you can sign up to a tier, so from $5, $10, $15 every single month. And the more you give, the more extra bonus content from Red Handed that you will get directly onto your podcast player of choice, unless you want to watch the video content, in which case you've got to watch it on the website. So this month we have got for your listening pleasure some samples from our monthly segment In the News, where we talk about all the wild and wonderful things that are going on in the world of true crime news at the moment. This month, we talk about Dog the Bounty Hunter and his cameo in the Gabby Petito and Brian Laundrie case. Then we've got a snippet from our Under the Duvet podcast that we release every single week, and it's over an hour long, with a brand new segment that we've started there called Empty Handed, where we listen to your guys' relationship dramas and give you the best advice we can. And finally, there is also a snippet today from our bonus monthly Patreon episode that we release for $10 and up patrons, which is a full-length episode of Red Handed. And this month, we covered the case of none other than Raoul Moat, with all of his Gaza plus a fishing line with a rotisserie chicken on it glory. So, if you like the sound of that, take a listen to this.
Send you this after listening to the Under the Duvet yesterday. I have had an almost mirror image experience recently from Two or Three One, and thought I would tell you about it because it's been making me think negatively about myself.
No, Leah. And stop
what
that.
Could I have done differently? What did I do wrong?
Nothing.
And it just made me see.
Well, maybe
it nothing
let's
to do with me. So met this guy on Tinder, had known him from like half a lifetime ago. He's aged well, so, you know, looks better now. So went on dates, he made me.
Men always do. It's so unfair.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah,
unfair.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, I reckon I've got 5 years before shit hits the fucking wall.
Oh, my shit is already all over the fan. I think I peaked about 24. It's only downhill from here.
Oh, I'm like, right, but 3 years probably to find somebody and be like, okay, look, just remember how I look now because it's going away. Okay, sorry, let's go back to Leo.
Laugh all the time. He's so funny and charismatic. He was really affectionate. He was very good in bed, which also helped. But I didn't jump into that straight away. You know, I waited and then it happened naturally. And then we were seeing each other like every 2 days, and he went away with his family for like, I don't know, 4 days, and he still made an effort to speak to me. I don't think the signal was that great, but he did. I spoke to him at least a few times a day. Whoa. Then I went away for a week to see family in England, and you know, texted me every single day, all that stuff. So when I got back, he had went out and got me my favorite juice from America, and we were in the supermarket, and I had mentioned that I like a certain kind of sweetie, and then he kind of disappeared for a minute and came back and he bought me it. You know, little cute things like that. And then I made this whole steak dinner for his birthday and bought him some rum. And he just went all quiet and was on his phone the whole night. And so it just made me feel so awkward. And then, you know, in the morning he was like, what was wrong with you and all this stuff? So I just kind of said, what were you doing on your phone? He started to blame me, like I was being awkward. And then the next time we met up, after hardly speaking for a couple of days, I just said to him, what's the issue? What do you want to do? And he goes, oh, can we just be friends? I said, yeah. But I'm not friends with people I fuck, so probably not. And I feel like it's completely my fault. But after listening yesterday, I realised he's not there. He's not where I need to be. So I appreciate you guys, and I love the podcast. Bye.
Okay. My mouth is agape, Leah.
Yeah. Okay. Firstly, can I say, Leah, I fucking love your accent. I love it. I love the Scottish accent. It's my favourite, possibly. Next. Okay. I don't even know where to start unpicking this. Okay. Firstly, it's not your fault. No. It's not your fault because there were, again, there's not red flags until there are red flags. And as soon as there was a red flag, you were like, okay, what's going on? And it is that 180 of the like, everything is great, everything is great. And then suddenly it falls off a cliff.
Yeah.
It's not the like gradual decline where you feel like, is this fizzling? Are we not making enough effort? It's that instant snap that it is so shocking because you feel like you've just been hit by a bus. So I absolutely empathize 100% with like why that is such a fucking slap in the face. It's like having a bucket of cold water thrown over you. My theory, birthdays are always fucking pinch points. Birthdays, Christmas. They are like pinch points.
New Year's.
These are times of when these kind of 180 situations happen, in my opinion. And I think what's happened here, and this is just my opinion on the matter, is A, I don't think you did anything wrong. B, I don't think he didn't like you. I absolutely do think. You don't make that kind of sustained effort if you don't like that person. I absolutely believe that he did. The problem here is, again, you said it yourself, Leah, it's a very mirror image of like what happened to me, where I think what people do is they meet somebody, they get very excited, they get very invested very quickly, and they make all this effort because they want the other person to like them. They want that validation from the other person. Then what happens is you start to like them because they're saying all the right things. They're making all the right noises. They're like doing all the right things. This, you know, going and getting this, going and doing this, and like knowing this is special, remembering things that are important to you, all of this kind of stuff. And of course, you then fall for that person because that's what they wanted. That was the point of what they did. It's all marketing. I'm not saying they don't mean it. I think they mean it as much as they can mean it, at least in this situation. I think, like in my situation, I think he meant it as much as he could mean it at that time. Then what happens is you then make an effort for his birthday, rightly so, because you think it's a thing. Then they get freaked out because then it's starting to dawn on them what they have done, that they have led you both down this path where there are now expectations from you on them and expectations that they think you have to deliver for them.
Yeah.
And then suddenly you cooking them this steak dinner, which is a very incredibly thoughtful thing to do. It's not just like, oh, here's a fucking teddy bear I picked up at the petrol station. Effort. Again, I assume that's something that you guys have talked about. And suddenly he starts to feel freaked out. Suddenly it's like, oh my God, this is moving too quickly. And the whole like him being on his phone, blah, blah, blah. This is what I don't like, because I don't want it to sound like I'm just making excuses for this person. Like, again, it comes back to what I was saying. You should have the fucking integrity and the self-awareness to know what you are and aren't capable to commit to at that point. It sneaks up on you as the person who is the like partner in that situation. I don't understand how it sneaks up on that person.
No.
Unless they have a total lack of self-awareness. No. How one day you can be like, I really like this person. I want to be in a relationship with them. I want to do this, that, and the other. And then one morning to wake up and be like, whoa, it's all gotten a bit deep.
Maybe it's the male brain.
Maybe it is. Because I have never been in a scenario where I haven't had a creeping dawning upon me that I didn't want to see a future with this person. Mm-hmm. And my behavior slowly changed. And I realized and I got out of that within a week or a few days. We're just fucking be saying all this crazy shit one day about how much I like them and then to go cold turkey I think immediately.
It really, and you know what, Leah? I'm going to tell you a story. I've previously not told this story before because it was a bit too raw, but this is actually the reason for my active break from dating, and it's quite similar. So
I'm not going to go into an enormous amount of detail because my mom's probably going to listen to this. Karen, I do not want to hear about this from you at all. No. So someone I went to school with, there have been vibes for years. He's a social worker, so you would assume he had some sort of moral compass. But as we go on to find out, he does not. So while I was living at home waiting for my flat sale to go through, I lived at home for 5 months. There was not a weekend I didn't hear from him. Pursuit. 5 months of pursuit. And then I moved back to London, go for a sleepover, didn't have sex. Thank you very much. But just went for a sleepover. And then he just fucking vanished. And like, we have the same group of friends, right? Like, I see him all the time. And so in my mind, I was like, oh, like, that's kind of an insurance policy. Like, he's not going to fuck about with me because I see him all the time. And our friends are the same.
It's a high risk.
Yeah. So I was like, oh, he's not going to do that to me. Like, we've known each other for 20 years. Oh, no, my friends. Oh, no, my friends. So then he just vanishes, goes super like ice cold. And I was like, what the fuck is this? So then I ascertain that he will be at a party that I am also at. And I wish I could 100% remember what I said, but I can't because
the police are now actively looking for Gabby. And on the 19th of September, tragically, Gabby's remains were found in Wyoming. And, you know, her family's worst fears were realized that she was, in fact, dead. And, yeah, a massive manhunt, like I said, has been underway for Brian Laundrie, with still no success. And like I said, the FBI were involved, the police were involved, volunteers, and also, of course, Dwayne Chapman. Mm-hmm. Dog the Bounty Hunter got involved. So Dwayne Chapman is an interesting character because, like I said, we obviously grew up in Britain, never watched it, but I know exactly who he is, mm-hmm. which is quite an interesting,
I'm going to look up his face to remind myself.
Yes, quite an interesting cultural phenomenon. Mm-hmm. But I feel like, and this is the thing I'm not enjoying, is that a lot of people are obviously very fascinated by the Gabby Petito case. There's nothing wrong with that. I think it is a very compelling case and it's obviously very tragic. But a lot of people are, I think, slightly getting too much on the Dog the Bounty Hunter bandwagon.
Oh, yeah.
Because he is out there now and he has...
It's like a bargain bin Hulk Hogan.
Yes. And he is actively... What's the word? Actively giving his skills up to find Brian Laundrie. So I thought it'd be interesting to just have a quick chat about who Dwayne Chapman actually is, because I didn't know any of this. And I think let's not romanticize this man. So he dropped out of school at the age of 13 and he joined a biker gang called the Devil's Disciples at the age of 15. Obviously, immediately into hardcore criminal activity, drugs, mules, that kind of stuff. And then in 1976, he was involved in the murder of a black man. And he says that he didn't know that the people he was with were going to murder this man, even though he had gone with these people in their truck while they were all carrying guns and racially abusing this man. Mm-hmm. So I don't really know what he thought was going to happen.
They weren't
going to
give him a high five, were they?
No, they definitely weren't. So after this man was shot and killed, Chapman was actually convicted along with the other men who were there of first degree murder. But he only served 5 years in prison, presumably because he wasn't actually the one holding the gun or anything. Mm-hmm. But still, he was convicted of first degree, so I don't really understand how that happened. But anyway, once he got out, he started working as a bails bondsman and also as a bounty hunter. So I feel like most people probably know what this is, but just in case you don't, obviously if you get arrested and charged, then you would be asked to possibly post bond or post bail, which is when you have to pay a huge amount of money as like collateral to say, let me go home and then I'll turn up to my court dates as you have requested. Most people can't afford their bail or their bonds. So what they do is they go to a bail bondsman and you pay the person 10% of your total bail money and then they post the rest.
I think you only ever have to post 10% bail.
So
I think either your family members do it for you or you pay it or you get a bail bondsman to do it if your family aren't going to bail you out.
Oh, see, that's not my understanding from my... I might be wrong, but what I understood was that say your bail is £10,000, then you pay the bail bondsman £1,000 and then they put up the 10,000 And if you turn up to your court hearing, they get their 9,000. They get all the money back and they keep the, they get the like the benefit of that extra 10%. But if you don't turn up to your court hearing and you run off, then they come find you and they will fucking murder you. Because now that bail bondsman has lost all that £10,000.
Okay.
So then, because you forfeited it when you didn't turn up.
I thought, and again, it might be, because in the live show story, which I'm not going to give the game away, the bail is 10 grand and his mum posts a grand and he's allowed to go.
Oh, weird.
But maybe it's a state by state thing. I don't know.
But yeah, basically this is the risk that the bail bondsman takes. And this is the risk you take if you go to a bail bondsman, because if you don't turn up, they will send a bounty hunter after you.
Right, got it.
To fuck you up. Because it's basically like borrowing money from the mafia. Mm-hmm. They've lost out now. So whatever the structure is, you don't want to be doing this. You don't want to be not turning up to your court dates in this scenario. So this is what Chapman was doing. And I think a lot of people think he's been famous for like ever, because when you look at him, he looks really old and he kind of looks like he's been famous for decades. But it's kind of not actually the case, because it wasn't actually until 2003 that Dwayne Chapman actually became famous. Mm-hmm. And basically the way he did it, again, just kind of feeds into that whole life on the run, romanticized, I'm a biker, but I've got these morals kind of vibe. So basically, he's working as a bounty hunter in 2003 when a man named Andrew Luster, which I hate as a surname for a man who is a sex offender.
Yeah, it's not great.
No, not ideal. Andrew Luster basically committed a series of crimes and then ran off to Mexico. And Dwayne Chapman, as well as a couple of other men, went after him. They caught him. And they were trying to get him back over the Mexican border into the US. And at this point, they get caught by Mexican authorities. And I thought this was really fucking hilariously awful. Basically, Mexico were like, we don't know about that guy.
Mm-hmm.
We'll send him back to the US. Like, whatever, you're basically over the border, off you go. And thankfully, authorities did arrest Andrew Luster and off he goes. But the Mexican authorities were like, we're not letting you go, to Dwayne Chapman and the other men who had caught him. They said, bounty hunting is illegal in Mexico, so we are going to charge you with aggravated kidnapping or something like that, like illegal, unlawful kidnapping, something. And we're going to basically throw the book at you, because we can't just have Americans coming into Mexico doing whatever the fuck
hunting
they want.
Hunting people. Like, full stop. That's absolutely the last thing Mexico needs.
No, exactly. So it looked like these guys were going to go down for it. But back in the US, this case got a lot of coverage. Like I said, it was very... the kind of a criminal that Andrew Luster was, this kind of man fighting for freedom, Dog the Bounty Hunter. He'd gone to Mexico, tracked him down. It was very like, you know, felt like a movie to people.
Yeah.
So then, you know, he got a lot of public support behind him. Politicians actually came out in support and spoke to Mexico, and they were like, look, just let him go.
Give us the dog back.
Yeah. So Mexico dropped the charges in the end. And Dwayne Chapman came back to the US, where he was rewarded with a show, Dog the Bounty Hunter, which is very smart for whichever producer came up with that and jumped all over this story that was unraveling in the press. Exactly. So the show actually ran for 10 years.
I mean, no wonder we've heard of it then.
Yeah, like. Yeah. And this is despite the fact that about halfway through his tenure, Dwayne Chapman was caught using some rather unsavory racial slurs.
Uh-oh.
But apparently didn't matter. We just keep going. And I think since then he's had a variety of shows that have all sort of failed, and now he is kind of irrelevant.
Mm-hmm.
Apart from the fact that people know who he is, he's not really relevant anymore. So yeah. I think his whole hunt for Brian Laundry is a desperate attempt for relevance and possibly a new show. Which, you know, if he finds Brian Laundry, then fair enough. But also, let's just be aware of who Dwayne Chapman is before everyone cheerleads him, is the only thing I want to say. Because he talks all the time about how he's done like armed robberies, blah, blah, blah. And you know, I'm a hard man. I've been on both sides of the law. But he never talks about how he was arrested on the first degree murder of a probably racially motivated murder.
Yeah, right. I feel like that should be information that everyone is given.
Yeah. So there you go. And right now, Dog the Bounty Hunter and the police, no one seems to have caught Brian Laundry. Dog the Bounty Hunter also says that he's been receiving countless tips from the from the public. And at first he said he wasn't going to share them with the police. Now he is, apparently. and they suspect that Brian Laundrie is hiding out on an island off the coast of Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was like spotted nearby buying a phone or something by a cashier. But we don't really know where he is. He took $1,000 out of his checking account or whatever before he left his cards at home. So
before he committed suicide.
Yeah, yeah. And I presume he's living off that.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
And although he felt like he had nothing left to live for, Raoul Moat did have a plan. And just a couple of hours before his release on the 1st of July 2010, Moat described this plan to a fellow prisoner as follows. Get a gun, shoot Sam, shoot her new boyfriend, shoot Sam's mum, shoot a social worker who had previously pissed him off, shoot the psychotherapist who had given him a bad report.
I mean,
plan.
It's a plan.
It is a plan.
It's not a particularly well thought out or nuanced plan.
No.
But a plan it is.
And, you know, I actually initially thought the biggest hurdle in this plan, Raoul Moat, is you getting a gun. But apparently, once on the outside, step one of the plan, get a gun, didn't take long. Now, whilst Moat went to a local barber to get a mohawk cut into his hair, even though it's not part of the plan, he's off script now, his close friend Carl Ness picked up a sawn-off shotgun that he had sourced while Moat was in prison. Again, I feel like I wouldn't even know where to begin to get a gun in this country, but I guess he has got connections to the criminal underworld.
Oh, yeah.
And then at 2 p.m. the same day, Moat went to a local fishing shop, where he bought a bag of round lead balls, normally used as fishing weights. At home, Moat opened up the shotgun cartridges that had come with his sawn-off shotgun and poured out the small lead pellets inside the cartridges designed for killing birds and rabbits.
This is some mafia shit, man.
This really is. I mean, I had no idea. I mean, well, I'm saying this like I should or would. Or could, but I didn't, and we're learning a lot here. But don't do any of this, please. Don't put this learning into action. Just listen. So then he replaced what he had pulled out of the cartridges with one big lead ball in each cartridge. So he's like, we don't want all this fucking, like, dust that's just going to, like, fucking kill a rabbit. We're going to put a giant lead ball in every single one and then put it in a fucking shotgun, a sawn-off shotgun. And then that evening, following information that Sam's new boyfriend was also a martial arts instructor, Moat and Carl Ness drove around Newcastle, going to various dojos and local sports centres looking for Sam's new man. But they had no luck.
I know I'm not supposed to be rooting for Raoul Moat here, but I really wish it was like went round all of the dojos and did a training montage.
Mm-hmm. I'm surprised there isn't a movie based on this. Maybe there is. That is definitely like
Eye of the Tiger. It's the Eye of the Tiger time.
Like a part of this story.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And there's definitely loads of steps in Newcastle that you could run up and down.
Oh, I bet. I don't actually know Newcastle very well. Have I been to Newcastle?
I've only been once.
I've not been. I've been to Liverpool. I haven't been to Newcastle.
Famously different places.
Like, very famously. It's because I was trying to figure out in my mind where I had actually been, and I've been to Liverpool, not Newcastle.
The next day, Moat, Ness, and their mutual friend, Cora Marwan, who they called Sean for whatever reason, I know whatever reason, racism. They drove to a local B&Q where Moat bought a tent. Ness and Arwan then dropped Moat off with Moat's oldest and bestest friend, Anthony Wright. That evening, Anthony Wright could tell Moat wasn't doing so well. He looked gaunt. So Wright did what any of us would have done and took him for a KFC, but Moat wouldn't eat it. Throughout that evening, Moat kept calling Sam relentlessly, but she didn't pick up. Until finally, 11:24, Sam and Moat had the first of three life-changing phone calls.
Sam spoke to Moat for a few short minutes, the first time, briefly arguing with him about their dogs before hanging up and leaving Moat enraged. Then Moat called her again 17 times before she finally answered. The call became heated and only lasted a few minutes. Moat was sat in his van with Carl Ness and was well and truly headed for the edge. Moat got through to Sam one final time, and this time he spoke to her mum and her neighbour Jackie. Sam's mum and Jackie both berated Moat and told him that he and Sam were over and then hung up for the final time.
Then Carl Ness drove Moat and his sawn-off shotgun to Sam's mum's house in Birtley, just south of Newcastle. Sam and her mum were having a drink with the window open. Moat crept across the garden with the shotgun and hid under the open window, listening to their conversation. Soon it became clear Sam's new boyfriend was also inside. Around an hour later, at 1 a.m. on Saturday the 3rd of July, Carl Ness texted Moat telling him they'd all miss him if he died or went back to prison. Moat replied saying, "No problem, mate, you're the best." Moat then texted Carl Ness again, saying that both Sam and Jackie were inside slagging him off and that it was hard to hear, given all they'd been through together. Ness didn't respond to this text. Moat then texted Carl again, asking him if he should climb through the window. But again, there was no reply. So Moat again texted, saying that he was going to wait outside and then, quote, "they would see who's laughing."
Not the sounds of a sound mind, no. I would argue.
Obviously, we don't really know that much about this guy, Carl Ness, but I'm like, he's saying things like, "you're not looking that great, we would miss you if you died or went back to prison," which is saying, hinting at, like, don't do anything crazy. Mm. Then why are you buying him a fucking sawn-off shotgun and driving him to his ex's house?
It's conflicting,
mm-hmm.
But men do like a 180, we've learned.
They do, and not in a, like, cool skater way. Over an hour and a half later, 22-year-old Samantha Stobart and 29-year-old Chris Brown left Jackie's house, giggling and holding hands. They walked past Moat without seeing him and actually made it onto the road before the 6'3" Moat rose up out of the bushes and loaded two cartridges into his shotgun.
This must have been quite the sight. Moat was gaunt. He'd not eaten properly in weeks. He hadn't slept properly either. And the hair in his menacing mohawk was starting to fall out. Chris stood in front of Sam, shielding her. Moat raised his gun and fired a shot. The giant lead ball hit Chris in the chest, damaging his heart and liver, but amazingly, he managed to stay on his feet and stumble out into the road, and he started to run. Moat unloaded the second barrel of his shotgun, hitting Brown in the back of the neck. Brown fell to the ground and Moat stood over him. Moat reloaded his gun and shot Christopher Brown once more in the head, killing him instantly.
Moat then turned to see Sam looking out at him from the window of Jackie's house. And this thing, he doesn't even like come to his senses after he's done this, because he just picks up his gun and shoots Sam, hitting her in the stomach. As Sam hit the floor and crawled away, Moat began running. He ran towards where he thought Ness would be waiting for him in the van, but when he got there, Ness and the vehicle were both gone. So Moat kept running until he found a phone box where he phoned Anthony Wright and told him, "I've done it, and the police are trying to kill me." Wright asked how he knew that Chris was dead, and he asked if Sam was okay. Moat replied, quote, "Listen, Ant, he's gone," and then reassured him that Sam was okay, but starting to get the gist of it. Eventually, Moat found his way to a taxi rank and got in a cab. He directed the driver to the house of Carl Ness's stepdaughter, where he met up with Ness and Awan. All three of them got in Awan's blacked-out Lexus and drove to where Ness had left the van. They put the tent in the Lexus and drove off. After a 45-minute drive, the trio pulled over at a small patch of woodland in the idyllic rural town of Rothbury. Rothbury would soon host the largest police manhunt the UK had ever seen at the time. Hopefully you enjoyed that, and if you did and you want to get your hands on some extra bonus content from us on a regular basis, just head on over to patreon.com/redhanded right now to check it out.